This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Koo Soo Chong, joined by Wong Shoning and Philip C. Now, it's 7.36 in the morning, which means in 30 minutes' time, we'll have a breakfast grill.
Yes, and I'll be speaking to Jing Tan. He's the Regional Manager for International SOS. Now, we all know that the COVID-19 pandemic has underscored the need for companies to adapt quickly to health crisis. Has this translated into booming business for health and security services company International SOS? We discussed the business prospects of the company as well as lessons learned during the pandemic, including efforts to streamline certification for travel with Jing Tan, Regional General Manager and Director for Southeast Asia.
Okay, so that'll happen in about 8:05. But in the meantime, we'll see that US President Joe Biden has marked his first 100 days in office. And leading up to that milestone, he made his first formal address.
Yeah, so he made his first, like Chuang said, he made his first formal address to Congress on Wednesday evening, where he argued the need for greater government spending. So President Biden announced a third economic plan, this time the American Families Plan, worth $1.8 trillion to fund childcare and expand access to education. Altogether, Biden has rolled out economic plans totaling $6 trillion. So in light of this 100-day mark, how has the president's actions from the economy to foreign policy and immigration stacked up against his campaign promises?
To answer that question, we've got on the line with us now Robert Shapiro, Professor of Government at Columbia University. Thanks for joining us, Prof. Now, perhaps the most pressing of Biden's promises was to rein in the pandemic, in part by accelerating the vaccination program. He's achieved the goal of 200 million shots in 100 days. Would you say he's fully made good on his pandemic-related pledge then?
I think he more than surpassed the expectations that he raised. He may have kept the expectations low, but the 200 shots is pretty extraordinary. And in parts of the country where the pandemic has subsided, we've noticed the effects quite visibly already.
Now, the Biden administration also at the same time, they've rolled out $1.9 trillion relief bill and a $2 trillion infrastructure plan, which was met with opposition from the Republicans and even some moderate Democrats. How would you compare his economic agenda against promises made on the campaign trail then?
Oh, I would say there he's surpassed them, and I think surpassed them in an extraordinary way. More liberal, more socialist-leaning Democrats have basically confirmed that he's surpassed their expectations. And keep in mind that the rescue plan is already passed. That's $1.9 trillion. And what's at stake is $4 additional trillion in the two new bills. It's extraordinary in the dollar amounts. It's extraordinary how it's reshaped and even transformed government involvement in the economy and society more generally.
I mean, truly transformative, but he also ran on a campaign pledge to unify the country. And all these infrastructure spending is partisan, no?
Yeah, where he's fallen short is his promise to reinvigorate bipartisanship. And there he has not succeeded. Keep in mind that the rescue plan was passed through reconciliation bill that did not require any Republican support. And there he may have obviously overpromised because of the strong Republican opposition. And now we're seeing it more visibly in the context of the infrastructure bill and the American Family Plan, where he's also running against opposition in his party. And I think that opposition in his party is what will constrain him ultimately.
Yeah, Prof, the Trump era was marked by the U.S.-China trade war, and Biden has maintained his tariffs. He's also held on to Trump-era sanctions on Iran. Have you been surprised by his foreign policy?
Well, with regard to Iran, he's trying to move in a different direction. With regard to China, no, I'm not surprised, because a lot of what Trump did was actually supported by a lot of Democrats, including Bernie Sanders, with regard to trade. And policy toward China is one area of foreign policymaking in general, that is not partisan, that it's not ridden with partisan conflict in the way we see in other issues.
Now, Biden also promised police reform, but those furthest left in his party are actually even calling for stricter gun control and even possibly defunding the police. Now, how has he approached this issue so far?
Well, so far he's talked the talk in an appropriate way, but this is a pretty divisive issue, and I think even within the Democratic Party. And fundamentally, these issues are more local issues than national issues. And with regard to throw into the mix gun control, that's a further divisive issue, where we have an issue that's not really very good for the Democrats, and where in terms of public support for what Biden has done, that's one area that he hasn't gotten public support.
So, Professor, are you saying that at the end of the day, he's rather limited in what he wants to do in this with regards to police reform and also gun control then?
I think he's going to be limited. And the one problem here is that the way the police reform proposals have been framed in terms of defunding the police, that's not a productive way of doing it. Reforming the police is a different story. And coupled with that, it has to do with how police have treated African Americans and other minority groups in the United States. And there may be some bipartisan support, because Tim Scott, who gave the response to the to Biden's address last night, is working with Democrats on that.
But one area where he's still getting a lot of heat on is immigration, especially on the Mexican border. Now, he's had an executive action to halt the construction of the border wall and reverse travel bans on certain Muslim-majority countries as well. What's your view on his ability to move forward on these immigration policies?
First of all, that's the policy area where he's doing least well in terms of his approval rating, and that could be a defining issue in the next presidential election that the Democrats will have to deal with. I think he underestimated the difficulty of the border issue, and coupled with the strong signal that his election gave to people who were considering trying to move to the United States. And that really is a troubling issue for the Democrats.
So Biden's approval ratings have hovered steadily just about 50%, above 50% throughout his time in office so far, Prof. That's higher than the 40%+ President Trump received in the same period. How much can we read into this?
Well, it goes to show you how strong partisan conflict is. He has not made inroads among Republicans in terms of increasing support among that group, and he's even found it difficult to get any extraordinarily high level of approval from independents within his own party. His approval rating is basically off the charts. His approval rating from Democrats exceeds what Trump used to brag about as his approval rating from Republicans. But it really just goes to show the difficulty in the United States due to partisan conflict and how he has a difficult job ahead. And he's banking on the performance of his government in dealing with the virus and the economy to turn those things around politically for him and the Democrats.
And so based on what you've seen from his administration in the first 100 days, what does it tell us about what's to come, though?
We've been using the word transform with regard to his the rescue plan, the jobs plan, and the families plan. It shows that he has an aggressive agenda. He probably will roll with the punches, so to speak, and he's going to probably proceed to push changes in policy on issues of policing, gun control, the environment, and immigration. I think he's shown a certain kind of relentlessness at the moment that I think will continue at least through the 2022 election, where things might have to change if the Democrats lose control of Congress.
It's true. The 100 days have been truly transformative, and he's been incredibly busy. What's next on his agenda for the next 100 days then?
Well, I think what's on the agenda for his next 100 days is the American Jobs Plan and the American Families Plan, to see if he can get some Republican support, and to see if he can't get that, whether he can get his own party to fully support that. If it doesn't, he may have to backtrack and try to engage in compromises both within his party and with Republicans.
And before we let you go, Prof, what are some of the key features marking Vice President Kamala Harris's first 100 days in office as well?
Well, the crucial role that Kamala Harris has played is she was the deciding vote in the American Rescue Plan, and in terms of the impact of one vote, you can't do any better than that. In terms of her making her mark in the administration, I think at this point she's remained visible at Biden's side in terms of supporting his policies and being visible as these announcements have been made. What we want to look for is whether or not she's able to carve out, or Biden gives her a very visible policy portfolio, even if it's one policy area where she can succeed and show her leadership ability.
Okay, thanks a lot for your time. That was Professor Robert Shapiro, Professor of Government at Columbia University. Now, it's interesting because according to the stats and the polls, one of every two Americans support Biden so far. It's not hard to see, right? He's actually delivered on the vaccines. He's delivered on basically being a Robin Hood, taxing the rich. Well, at least saying
Well, not yet.
Not yet.
Proposing it.
He's also got this plan, this families and
Americans jobs plan.
And he's also riding on the crest of a wave of the first quarter GDP, well over
6%. 6.4%.
6.4%. So he's done really well. It's the longevity of those campaign pledges though, and the execution, I think, which matters as well.
The question is, did he take advantage of his first 100 days to roll out as much as he can? Because in any government, when you first get elected, you have a bit of goodwill. You have a bit of time. Your opposition might be a little bit more circumspect in criticizing you. But after a while, oh my goodness.
It's a honeymoon for the first 3 months.
Yeah, it's honeymoon and then the honeymoon comes to an end.
That's right. I think that's why it's an absolute rush, because he needs to get all this done, because in two years' time, they've got the midterm elections.
Yeah, now, exactly.
It's a very interesting point. Let's look at his style. Because his work is so substantive, I like the Sleepy Joe style, because it kind of portrays, look, I do all this, but he kind of mutes it down
quietly.
With his style.
Quietly. Yeah, there are no longer any of these 3 a.m. tweets out. He doesn't call Fox News when he feels like it, and he gives his commentary whenever he thinks he's right. So it's totally different, where actually almost the technocrats, the government servants, are the ones making the announcements. So his theme is clearly, maybe I under-promise and I over-deliver. But we'll see. It's still very early days.
But the ideas are so radical. And it's so interesting to match it with a very subdued tone.
It's very nice, because in stark relief to Donald Trump's bluster and braggadocio, right? Yes. But substantively still the same, even including their approach to China and the sentiment towards it. Okay, up next we'll talk to Sharifah Zaida Nolisha of the Malaysia Oil and Gas Services Council on the National Oil and Gas Services and Equipment Blueprint. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.